down the street, sort of on the east side of New York.
Okay, we'll call to order the joint meeting of the House Revenue Committee and the Senate Committee on General Government. I think we want to welcome Senator Duncan and Senator Starr with us today. Did you want to convene yours in public hearing?
Yes, I need to do that, don't I?
You want to do that? There's a gavel to tap.
Okay. I'm going to open the meeting in general government, the revenue side of it, for a public hearing.
Thank you. I want to welcome everybody today, including those in the overflow room. And as I understand from the leak in the roof in hearing room B, overflow might be a more literal term this morning than usual, and perhaps not inappropriate for the opening topic of the agenda this morning. We have with us today, I want to welcome back Cora Parker and Tom Petowski for the December revenue forecast, the much anticipated and long awaited forecast. Paul, do you have any comments you want to make before we turn it over to the state economist? Tom, welcome to revenue. Turn it over to you, of course.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, and members of both committees. For the record, my name is Tom Petowski, state economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. With me today is Cora Parker, revenue economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. This is Cora's last day with our office, and I'd like to thank her for excellent work she's provided.
Hi. Was this part of your, is this your 2%?
No, she's going on to become a BAM analyst for the state, and also we have a new section in this forecast. You'll find my resume in the back section. Anyways, I'd like to thank Cora for excellent work with our office and for the service she's provided to the governor's office and to members of both the Senate and the House.
Thank you. We would echo that. Sorry to see you.
Today we're releasing our December 1 economic and revenue forecast. The Office of Economic Analysis is assisted in this process by the Department of Administrative Services Economic Advisory Committee and the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. These two committees review preliminary versions of our economic forecast, and their comments are, and suggestions are incorporated into our final forecast that we're presenting to you today. So I'll start off with a brief overview of the economic situation facing the state. Cora will follow with the revenue outlook. As I go through the economic outlook, I want you to keep in mind that our projections that we make for the Oregon economy do feed directly into our projections for our revenue outlooks.
Tom, before you get started, I wanted to make one announcement. If anyone has cell phones on or beepers, please be sure and turn those off in here this morning. We don't want to be distracted during the riveting forecast overview that we will be getting here shortly. Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And for the members today in front of you, you have a copy of these overhead slides. And so if you can follow that along, and for the audience, that'll be on the screen. This just briefly tells you a little bit about our process that we go through. I already mentioned about the two committees that assist us in this process. Essentially, for the U.S. economy, the nation is officially in recession right now. That was just announced last Monday. And the belief is that the U.S. economy slipped into recession probably in the month of March. And when they come up with this assessment with whether we're in a recession or not, it's a very broad-based. It has to be across all sectors of the economy before they're willing to admit that the economy is in this situation. About a month and a half ago, with consultation with people from the Oregon Employment Department, we sort of came out with an official public statement that the Oregon economy was in recession. And I think this just is another confirmation of that kind of statement.
I think that was at your last appearance before this committee that you yes. Declared the consummation.
One of the things we're looking at very closely is consumer confidence, and this is the Consumer Sentiment Index from the University of Michigan. One thing I wanted to point out here is that the last time we had quite a drop was when we were falling into somewhat of a recession, and that was in the 90-91 period, and that corresponded with the Gulf War. and my pointer is stuck to my... I can't lean it like this. It is really just stuck in there.
Okay.
In fact, I ripped my shirt.
All right. But you can see that the number actually dropped
that occurred is quite dramatic, given the September 11th events. And it really accentuated a downturn that was already occurring in the U.S. economy and also occurring in Oregon. The new consumer outlook that we have, and we're concerned about consumer outlook because this is the one sector that was keeping the economy really afloat for a while. After the terrorist attack, the sentiment, consumer confidence fell to where we consider it to be at recession levels, and we definitely see the recession now. The stock market was hit quite heavily, but it has recovered quite a bit. Still, though, it's at a depressed level, and that was just a situation that was occurring even without the September 11th events. Consumer spending fell very sharply, especially in the month of September. The outlook that we have for consumers, housing-related activity, is going to be a key support. There is some weakening there. Autos, they've been hit near-term, but there's been quite a spike up in October. What we're worried about that is, with the 0% financing, we're possibly grabbing future sales. And once those 0% financing go away, we may see those sales drop quite dramatically. The assumption is that the fourth quarter will see quite a dip in consumer spending, and our expectation is recovery in mid-2002 will help bring back the consumer spending in the economy. This recession has finally come to an end. It was the longest recession on record since our records were kept in the late 1800s. And what we're hopeful for, because there's still a great deal of uncertainty out there, is that this will be a mild recession for the U.S. economy, and we will also concur with that for the Oregon economy.
I'm sorry, Tom, you said the recession has come to an end, the expansion?
I'm sorry, the expansion.
There we go. Okay. I didn't want to get the... didn't want to get the wrong message out there.
Yes, the 10-year expansion. It had its 10-year anniversary this March, and that has finally come to an end. Very dramatically, the Federal Reserve, after increasing interest rates quite dramatically through mid of 2000, have now reversed course that they started in January of 2001. And the expectation is that they will also decrease interest rates another possible 25 to 50 basis points when they meet early this December. So their cutting is not quite over. And we now have some of the lowest interest rates we've seen in over 40 years. This downturn is not quite like the 90-91 recession. Some of the similarities, there was, in a sense, an attack in the Gulf War. It was the invasion into Kuwait, and then a response from us militarily. We're in a similar, in a sense, situation like that. We had definitely drop in consumer confidence quite dramatically as we got into the situation. And we have a cycle within a cycle. We were starting to have a downturn in 1991, and then the Gulf War situation occurred. And the same situation here. We were having an economic downturn occurring, and then we also had the terrorist attacks compounding the situation. There are some differences. There are some negatives. The nature of the war, I think this one has a lot more uncertainty and the length of it. Compared to what we had in the Gulf situation. This time around, we have a synchronized global cycle. All countries throughout the world are experiencing a slowdown together, which is different than we had in this other period. This was an investment-led downturn, which especially hit Oregon, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, and global deflation is a concern. We've seen that quite dramatically in Japan, as an example. Differences that are positive, we actually have some very weak oil prices right now compared to what we were seeing during the Gulf War situation. Our banking system is a lot stronger. Credit capability is there. And we also have a much stronger stimulus packages are in the works than we saw before 1991. So that kind of sums things up where compared with the 1991 situation, we think this recession is going to be deeper for the U.S., and we're going to concur with that for Oregon, too, But the recovery should be stronger than what we saw during that period of time. Recent news, conflicting news, GDP quarter three just released today, a revised figure. The first estimate was that the GDP was down by 0.4%. Today released, it was down by 1.1%. So that's quite a dramatic change and drop for our economy. Productivity was better than expected. Personal income still increasing, though at slower rates. In the housing industry, building permits, which is a little somewhat of a look towards the future, is down, but existing home sales are up. You get 30-year mortgage rates to come down, and you do get activity of people buying. Vehicle sales, as we mentioned, were strong in October, but that's because mostly of the 0% financing. Once again, it's an encouraging sign because you lower interest rates, incentives are out there, people react to them. Unlike maybe a situation in Japan where you can have very, very low interest rates, you don't get that kind of incentive to occur. We are getting those incentives here. The National Association of Purchasing Managers Index, which is an indication of future activity, is also down slightly. Our unemployment rate in the country has gone up. And it's still rising, and consumer confidence is one of the lowest levels we've seen.
Tom, could you expand just a little bit on the leading indicators up? You show that in the first one, GDP down, leading indicators up. What are we showing there?
Well, what we're looking here is, with the leading indicators, we're trying to see if there is some indication of the measures that they use for those that are starting to bottom out. And it appears that some of those are occurring. Where although they're all at lower levels and indications that we are in recession, when we get a little tick up in them, it's still at a lower level. And hopefully those try to show us about what's happening 6 months to the future. They're not always completely accurate, but it's one of our better pictures.
Is it whole goods? What are we talking about?
So what we're talking about is orders.
Durable goods.
Durable good orders have been up, especially have helped. Before today, though, we had unemployment claims go up again. They had been declining for the last 4 weeks, and that also helped the indicators jump up just slightly. So, once again, it's a perspective look out to the future. So you can still have indications where the economy is still declining now, but there can be those signals that look like things should be bottoming out and improving in the future. Turning to Oregon's economy, and what's happening in the U.S. definitely does directly affect us. We've shown this graph before. This is our real gross state product. It's basically just like the gross domestic product for the U.S., but it's at a state level, overall economic activity measure. The changes we've seen since 89 to 99, 99 is the most recent numbers we have for this period of time. You can see the influence of high-tech products moving from 3% to 22% of the total output value, and also a decline from the lumber and wood products. Still, though, lumber and wood is a very important sector for our economy. But what we want to show here is that we're a more diversified economy in our manufacturing base, but in durable goods manufacturing, we went from 13.6% to 26.3% of our output value. So even though we're more diversified in what we make, we're essentially a more concentrated manufacturing-based economy. And this recession has started in the manufacturing sector. Exports are also a good influence for us. We were coming out of the Asian financial crisis, doing quite well. The red line is the percentage change. You can see that as we were starting to get into January, we were almost at 3% growth of exports. That was very nice. We had some decline, and it ended into the negative region as we entered into 2001. And this is another indication of sort of the global slowdown that we're seeing in the world. This indication of a drop in our exports, the dominance today of computer and electronic products in that amount, and one of the hardest hit areas. Here's our actual employment growth by quarter for Oregon for total non-farm employment. This was our recession in 1991. Here we are in the U.S. recession. You can see that this is a little bit deeper than what we saw in 1991, but we really have a long ways to go before we have, I think, a situation as severe as we saw in the 80-82 time period. But still, more severe than 1991. This is an interesting graph showing some of our regions, and these are unemployment rates, and these are not seasonally adjusted. This is one of the first times in many years that we've seen the unemployment rate in the Portland metro area, and this particular graph does include Vancouver, Washington, is higher than our rural areas. And I think this is another indication of the extent that manufacturing, especially high tech, has been hit by this recession.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Senator Duncan.
I have a question. I wonder, is that skewed in any way by the fact that, let's take Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, many of those people would be in the farming community, and obviously they're really hurting, but they're not unemployed. I mean, they still are hanging on to their farm. Does that skew it a bit from the valley side at all?
Well, in terms of, it's a good point. You know, the unemployment rate is just as you stated. Are you presently working?
Yeah.
And it's not an indication of your income level.
Yeah, I might not be making any money, but
right.
I'm still a farmer.
Right. But, you know, perspective of that, the contrast of what this graph is showing is that at least, I think, last 15 years, you would have seen the unemployment rate, especially in the Portland metro area, being less than these rural areas. Macro forces that have regional impacts, there's been a drop in travel and tourism for Oregon. We've seen that hit at Portland PDX. We've had conventions canceled, hotel reservations dropped, and so we've had that sector of our economy hit. Although probably not as hard as some of our western neighbors, especially Nevada or especially Hawaii, where you have more sort of plain destination type traveling occurring, and much more dependent on tourism, although it is a very important sector for us. The lower stock prices have our negative wealth effect that we've talked about before, where people lose wealth and consequently will decrease their spending because of that. For us, especially technological investment crash, the investment that firms have been undertaking really dropped quite dramatically, and they've also slowed up their investment in technologies, which definitely hurt our high-tech sectors. And then the global recession with a strong dollar, that also has hurt our exports, and that hurts us across sectors, not just high tech, but also into agriculture, too, and lumber and wood. Energy costs, we have a bright spot in terms of oil prices, have come down very nicely, and that brings down our gasoline prices. On the other hand, we're playing catch-up with the speculative, what I call speculative bubble, in energy prices in natural gas and electricity, where we've seen some very high recent hikes in our electricity and natural gas prices to try to recover costs that were incurred while those prices were up very high. I see that more, if we can get through this year, they're probably going to lose some businesses because of the energy situation, but we should see those energy prices then starting to get a little better as we get into 2003. Key assumptions for this forecast. And while I'm going through this, I want to keep emphasizing this has been such an unusual period, especially with the terrorist attacks, in trying to forecast. And there's a great deal of uncertainty. We still try to give it our best spin, our best educational and expertise type guess as to what's happening, but still there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And so the assumptions we're using for this forecast, we're assuming there's not going to be any major terrorist attacks in the near future. If there is, of course, all bets are off. The U.S. counterattack will have no permanent adverse impact on confidence or oil prices. So far, that is seeming to be holding. Consumer business confidence, we expect that to recover in early 2002. We expect oil prices to remain weak. And even though debated right now in Congress, we expect a stimulus package to come out that's going to be quite strong. So here is our outlook for employment. This is the 90-91 period here, and we're looking at this being now a deeper downturn and negative for both 2001 and 2002. We're looking at a 0.7% decline in jobs for 2001 as we end out this year, and a negative 0.6% decline in 2002. In terms of looking at it in quarters, we believe that essentially the bottoming out of this downturn will happen in the second quarter of next year. Now, what that means is that a slow-type recovery will begin in the third quarter, but you're coming out of from the bottom of the barrel. You're bottoming out, and so still it's not going to look pretty throughout most of 2002. And it's not going to be till 2003 till we get back to employment levels that we saw in the year 2001.
Tom, it seems to me I've heard that the average lifespan of a recessionary period, at least in recent times, has been 10 months, something to that effect. So if the national recession commenced in March, that would look at the end of the recession sometime around the end of this year, first of next year. You're telling us, at least in terms of employment growth, we're not going to begin to climb out until middle probably of next year. Does that mean we're looking at a longer-term recession here in Oregon and a longer recovery? Is that how does that play between those two numbers?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The way I'm looking at it is I think the U.S. recession itself is going to be slightly longer than the 9 or 10 month average. This has been a little bit deeper. We also had the September 11th events. If it wasn't for the September 11th events, I would put it more towards that September, you know, 9 month sort of length. So I think it's going to be a little bit longer, and we move pretty coincident now with the U.S. economy. So I think as the U.S. economy will bottom out in the second quarter, I think it's going to be true for the Oregon economy. I think as we come out, I think the U.S. economy will come out faster than what the Oregon economy will be. I think some of the last stages of the recovery will be more strength in the manufacturing sector.
What's going to lead?
I really think you're going to have the non-manufacturing sector lead. You want to keep in mind, we even though our unemployment rate's gone up and in the seasonally adjusted in Oregon right now is 6.5%, you still have over 90% of your labor force is employed. When we have these stimulus packages and, from the federal government, we have the lower interest rates working their magic through the economy, I think you'll see the non-manufacturing sector will start to revive first. And then following that, hopefully as the global recession also gets better, our exports will improve, and then our manufacturing sector will get pulled up too.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What's the cumulative effect of the 0.7 and 0.6% drop? How many jobs are we talking about?
We're looking on the order of, as we started this decline, 30,000 to, say, 35,000, somewhere in that area. Lumber and wood products, I just have a few sectors here, not all of them. But lumber and wood still going to suffer through this. The lower mortgage rates are helping a little bit, but the commercial side has really tanked. So we expect them to stabilize a little bit, but there's not going to be much improvement for the sector. High tech is very, very volatile. We have said before this committee that we expect further announcements of layoffs to occur. Yesterday, we had a very unfortunate announcement from Fujitsu closing the Gresham plant. That'll be about additional now, 670 employees that will be laid off by January of next year. So this probably action is not over yet until we start to see a bottoming out. We have excess capacity, and unfortunately, to get rid of excess capacity, you'd love to be able to have sales go up, and that's how you get rid of it. But there's another way, and it's through closing plants. Housing sector, we've seen that stabilize a little bit. Once again, lower mortgage rates, people react to them, and people have been buying homes. So we've seen the housing starts at least stabilizing a little bit, and we expect those to improve as the economy improves. And then the risks to these forecasts. I just want to mention these just very briefly. The macroeconomic policies from the federal government, I think the mild on the downside, that's even becoming more mild. We're getting such stimulative actions occurring that I don't think there's much of a downside. But if we're talking about this whole period of time, 01 through 05, I think the danger we have is the Federal Reserve not wanting to be in the situation that they are in at all right now, with having to lower interest rates so dramatically, but feel that they have to. And so if we start to see signs of the economy recovering, I think you're going to see a rather quick turnaround by them, and you're going to see interest rates start to drift back up again rather quickly. But we have some very, very stimulative packages coming out of the federal government. Once again, defense spending in Oregon is not very strong. We don't have any true armed service bases in the state or huge defense contractors. We have some on the margin, so there won't be a lot of stimulus from any defense budget buildup. But there will be a stimulus from the regular tax relief and worker relief programs. International conditions, I think it's more a possibility of a strong downside in the near term that I've mentioned before. Energy prices, near term, with the hikes that we've seen, 40 to 50% some on commercial customers at the utilities, that can be harmful to those that are very dependent on energy as a large cost of doing business. But we've seen the market prices being quite low. I've mentioned to you before that it seems like anybody with a hamster and a wheel cage and some electrodes is out there trying to sell electricity. And so we've got quite a rapid supply of generation coming online.
Would you run through that, Mr. Chair? Would you run through that again? I want to write that down.
Yeah. It takes a hamster and electrodes.
And a wheel cage.
And a wheel cage, yeah. You can get it off the internet.
And in the stock market, it has, I think, stabilized quite nicely. It's almost back to its pre-depressed levels before the September 11th events. Consumer business confidence, this is going to be a real key. I think possibly it's more of a downside risk right now because of the uncertainty out there. The sooner that we have the Afghan situation wrapped up and we feel a little more confident about that situation, the better this business and consumer confidence will be. And in high tech, because it's such a volatile industry, we can see more possible layoffs or plant closures occurring, but it still is a growth industry for us. And we still have signs out there. Applied Materials, one of the world's largest suppliers of semiconductor equipment, has bought land in Oregon and plans to expand. Novell is expanding their campus. These tie right into the semiconductor industry. At least there is indication that there are people out there that are putting their money out in belief that these industries are going to recover and grow again. So with that, keeping that in mind, would you remind that we're looking at, from our September forecast, we're looking at a recession in Oregon that's deeper on net effect than what we were looking at in September. We're looking at possibly somewhat of a stronger recovery period. Still, though, what I think is relatively softer than what's happening for the U.S. economy. The net effect here is that the downturn is deeper and recovery overall, the whole situation is a downer from the September outlook. And that then feeds into our revenue forecast.
All right. Thank you very much. Cora.
Quick question.
Any questions? Yes, Representative.
Tom, on your graph on the gross state products, I noticed that government in 89 was at 14.9%. It is now down to 10%. And as a percentage terms, it's gotten smaller. Why was that?
Part of that is, I believe, both a movement, especially at the state level, where if we even look at employment as a percentage of total employment back 10 years ago to today, it's a smaller percentage of total employment in the state. So I think that part is, I think, mostly responsible for that kind of change.
So even though the population has increased...
Yes. Employment at the state has increased, too. Don't get me wrong there. But as a percentage of the whole, it has decreased. it hasn't grown as fast as private sector employment.
Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, referencing that same graph on page 6, real gross state products, I'm interested in the lumber and wood products of approximately $6 billion in 1989 and dropping to $2.4 billion in 1999. I'd be interested in seeing some figures on the revenue possibilities of a modest harvest increase from the state forests. Very candidly, how much we would have to accelerate the harvest to recoup $700 million. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else before we go to the revenue forecast? All right, you're on.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, I'm here to announce the December 2001 revenue forecast for those of you who haven't already peeked ahead in your slideshow.
Oh, come on.
As usual, I'll go through the lottery revenue forecast first, then we'll talk about the general fund revenue forecast. Actually, there's a slight change to the close of session forecast, too, so I'll be bringing that to you today as well. And then talk about the kicker, not only the kicker we just had, but sort of where we are, just to put things in context for any kicker in this biennium. And then again, just to talk about forecast risks. The lottery revenue forecast, a mild uptick from the last forecast. Additional revenues of $9.5 million from September are expected. Again, a portion of that is dedicated allocations, the Education Endowment Fund, Parks Fund, et cetera. So you're looking at a net increase to your ending balance of $6.8 million for the biennium. Just to give you an idea of what that looks like for the next three bienniums, you can see just mild upticks in resources to lottery for all three of those biennia. And if you take a look at the chart we've brought to you before that shows how more and more of that is becoming dedicated, you can see that the Education Endowment Fund and Parks Fund have taken up 30% off the top. Gambling now is 1%. But you see that debt service is taking up a larger and larger portion. 0103 is a fairly significant increase, and 0305 and beyond is even greater than that. Two reasons that those numbers look so big. One is that, of course, you passed quite a few new bonds in this legislative session. Those will be issued during this biennium, or may be issued during this biennium. But their debt service will take full effect in the following biennium. And also these numbers, which typically are offset by Education Endowment Fund earnings, those aren't reflected here in the outer biennium. But debt service, nonetheless, is taking up a greater percentage of lottery resources. All right, on to the general fund. The December 2001 forecast has general fund resources at $10.747 billion. That is a decrease of $411.9 million from the September forecast. It's $720.1 million below the close of session forecast. So you're looking at a net of 623 below zero, or if you want to have an ending balance like you left at legislatively adopted budget, you'd need to have $720 million. That's the hole that you need to fill to backfill all of the expenditures that you approved as well as the ending balance. The biggest decrease dollar-wise is in the personal income tax forecast, but it's roughly just 3% of a change from September. The biggest change percentage-wise is obviously the corporate forecast, $131 million, which is 16.4% of that source. And we have just seen that corporations, as far as estimated payments are going, they're really just falling off. They're just not coming in at all. And consistent with the employment numbers and the layoffs that you've heard, corporations aren't expecting to be paying a lot of taxes, to be making a lot of profits in the first place and then paying taxes on them in the next year or so.
Well, you mentioned an adjustment on the beginning balance. And that offsets, we're looking at 623 in the one column, 720 in the other. Do you want to address that?
Yes, I'm sorry, actually. I meant to go over that. The close of session forecast, when we brought that to you in September, I think you may remember that we mentioned there were still some reconciling items that we needed to work with LRO, LFO, some of the other agencies to get you to that expected roughly $90-some million that you had expected to leave on the table. We had said, no, with what we've got so far, it only looks like you're leaving $80-some million on the table. Well, after reconciling with everyone, there were some small changes that actually increased the close of session revenue forecast and did get you to that expected ending balance of $96.4 million. But the beginning balance for this biennium has not changed from September. The $53.9 million, if you're looking at that number, the close of session to September change, we reported that in September, and that was a reflection of actuals that came in between May and our September forecast. You were in the position of having to use the May forecast when you put your budget together. Actuals were coming in at that point in time that were far less than what we had expected, and so you started out actually at a lower spot than you thought to begin with. But that actually was already built in September, so that's not an additional change. Basically, you got $10 million extra in your close of session forecast, which on net makes you, you know, $10 million below in addition. The total change in the December forecast from close of session is $720 million. That includes beginning balance, that includes your personal income tax and corporate income tax and other revenue sources. We actually had some increases in other revenue sources. The insurance tax forecast increased by, I believe, approximately $15 million, which is pretty sizable. I think there was a slight uptick to cigarette tax revenues. There were some small decreases as well. But on net, you got close to $8 million out of your other general fund revenue sources. So that helps offset a little bit, at least. Just to take a look at how that impacts not only this biennium, but next biennium and beyond, you can see that we didn't bring down just this biennium's forecast of revenues. When Tom told you about decreasing employment, and even though we're starting to pull back, we won't even hit 2000-2001 levels until 2003. So our base has shrunk, and even though it's growing, it'll take some time to get back up there. So withholding payments are going to be much lower than they were, and that will continue through the next biennium. The numbers that you see here for 2003-05 do not include a beginning balance number. Obviously, right now there is no beginning balance under current law. You're $720 million in the hole to start out 2003-05. So if you were to include that here, this would actually look even more negative. The decreases that you see in 2005-07 are not quite as sizable. By that time, we're looking at getting close to the levels that we had expected before. This chart, again, just shows how revenues have grown over the last couple of decades, actually. And you can see when you get to 99-01 and then 01-03 that there's really minimal growth compared to what you see in the other biennia. This shows growth from biennia to biennia. Again, you see that 01-03 is the smallest percentage-wise growth compared to anything since the 80s, actually. Here's our black and white, or actually blue and white graph that we've brought to you before. The blue numbers here are actual revenues that would have come in just based on economic conditions and how growth actually would have looked just based on economic conditions. The white bars, however, show you what really happened because of having to pay out either large kicker refunds or the pension refund or the pension refunds that we paid out in July of this year. You can see that because of those, we're actually expecting to only have 2.6% growth in this biennium compared to last. The federal pension refunds were just over $100 million, and the kicker that we just paid out or have largely paid out was above $250 million. So that's a pretty big chunk that came right off the top of this biennium in addition to the decrease in revenues that we're expecting to see. You can see that by the time we get out to 05-07, we're expecting that there are no more of those refunds that we're paying out, at least under current law predictions, and so we're back on track as far as economic conditions being right in line with what's actually being collected. So what are the risks? Well, Tom walked through what the economic risks are, and as he's mentioned, those drive directly into the revenue forecast. As employment decreases, so does withholding, so does estimated payments. As corporate profits decrease, corporate payments decrease. There's a real one-for-one relationship. While there's some lag in some of the sources as far as timing goes, there is a direct relationship between the economic numbers that come out of the forecast that Tom puts together and the revenue numbers that you see here. Capital gains is always a risk in this forecast. We benefited from it during the 90s. To some extent, we were able to capture a lot of additional revenues. We sent a lot of additional revenues back out in the form of kickers because we weren't able to project exactly how much of that we would see. But there's a downside risk to that as well. It's just as difficult to predict what the downside of the stock market and other sources that feed into capital gains is as it is to predict the upside. So that's just a real risk factor either way in this forecast. Federal tax law changes. The underlying national forecast does assume, as Tom mentioned, that there will be some stimulus moving forward, that there will be some package coming out from the federal government, but depending on what that form is, could have some major impact on either our personal or our corporate income tax forecast. Depending on what some of the corporate changes are, that we could have some major impacts, some major negatives, actually, on the corporate revenue forecast. And other changes or other risks, you know, you could probably make your own list. This is probably one of the most uncertain forecasts in quite a long time as far as revenue goes.
Mr. Chair, Tom, I've been quoting you lately, and I want to be sure that I've been quoting you accurately. If I recall during the last forecast, I asked you the question. I said, I oftentimes hear people talking about, even politicians, talking about the over-collected taxes. And I asked you if that was an accurate statement. And if my recollection, and I hope I've been quoting you right, and I'm just sort of wanting to say this again, if I recall correctly, you said at that time, no, it was a bad guess on your part. Is that, have I been accurate? And I think I could probably go back to the record and check it again.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Senator Duncan, given that these are recorded sessions, you would be able to go back and check those.
So you may as well fess up.
Yeah. That's another way of putting it. Yes. I might add to that,
okay,
that you know, I think the reason that the kicker law came into being was because of a sense that revenues were coming in much stronger than what the state needed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one way to deal with it. My statement still stands, though, that I gave to you last time, in that my view is the way the process of the kicker, the mechanics of it, is basically a bad guess on my part by more than 2%.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, Mr. Chair, I was pretty sure of that, and I kind of want to be sure. I think we need to be getting the message out to the people all the time, and I hear that all the time, so that's why I want to just reaffirm once again, because I don't like to be using wrong statements. And thank you very much. I appreciate your statement.
Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, I think the gentleman flagellates himself too much. I think to guess a $35 billion budget within 2% is, or within 5% is very, very good. So thank you for what you do.
Mr. Chair, I should explain. I'm very impressed too. I just want to kind of make it clear about that terminology that people often use.
Representative Court.
Thank you, Corey. You talked about the federal tax law changes, and what we've heard and read in the papers is that there could be anywhere from a $50 to $100 million negative impact to our state from the corporate income tax changes. Is that reflected in your calculations for?
Yeah, this is current law.
Okay.
So to the extent, again, there is, it's sort of informally included to some extent, and that being because the national forecast that we use as a base for our Oregon economic forecast does assume that there will be some stimulus. But exactly what that stimulus looks like, you know, what form it's going to take as far as corporate tax credits or, you know, the exact form is not in that underlying national forecast. And so, you know, you could say that informally it's probably somewhat built into these numbers, but once something is officially passed, then that would obviously need to be really taken into account, and we'd be able to give you a better indication of what it looked like. There's a possibility that, at least as far as we've done internally, just some initial looks and talking with Department of Revenue, that we could see some big negatives depending on what's passed.
And solid.
Yes.
And what kind of numbers are you looking at when you?
I don't know that we've seen. I mean, I think probably what you have read in the paper is consistent with the informal look that we've done. We have not done anything formally. Paul's office actually may have done something more formal.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Ed has run some numbers on that, and it works out to roughly about right in between the numbers you cited, about $75 million per year, due to the accelerated depreciation that was in the House package, which has a 30% expensing in the first year. It would be a three-year program, so it would be a short-term effect and then pays out. But it would be about $75 million on average for that three-year period.
Thank you.
Okay, so I said I'd talk about the kicker just to sort of put things in context. Obviously, not only are we not above the forecast, so we're not in kicker land right now.
Sounds like a board game.
But I just wanted to put things in context so you knew where that did stand. Again, the close of session forecast is the base. So that is the forecast that you saw on, let me just take you back to it actually. Whoops. What's the draw here? The first column there, the 2001 close of session forecast that shows your ending balance of 96.4. The revenue figures that you see there, not the beginning balance figure, but the revenue figures that you see there are the base for your forecast. The corporate number is the base for the corporate forecast. And the personal income tax and other revenues are the base for the personal kicker. So those numbers now are considered final. You won't see those being revised again. We've done our reconciliation with LRO and LFO and everyone else involved, and that is the base now for any kicker calculations for this biennium. The personal kicker, again, is both personal and other general fund sources. If they're 2% above, then you have a kicker. Same for corporate. And what's important, as you may be entering a cycle where you have to make expenditure cuts, it's important to remember that those have absolutely no impact on the kicker. So anything that you have to do to get back into to balance on the expenditure side, absolutely no impact with respect to the kicker. Actually, here's where the kicker calculation stands right now. You see the base for both the personal kicker and for the corporate kicker. If you jump over to the far right column, the numbers that are sort of highlighted, those are the amounts that this forecast would have to increase by, $678.2 million and $209 million, to even reach the threshold. That would give us, like, you know, the $1 kicker. So anything above that, you've got quite a ways to go before you're anywhere near that. And again, here's just the history of where those have been in the past. We just sent out a $253.6 million personal kicker. Most of that has been sent out. There are a few small late returns and those sort of items that will continue to go out of the Department of Revenue. But for the most part, they've been processed and they are out of our coffers as we speak. Any questions?
Cora, I'd like you to go back to the general fund resources slide. I wanted just a little clarification before we go to the break on this difference between the 623 and 720. I understand that revenues are down 720.1 from the close of session, but you also have that 623.7. I'm just trying to get exactly the read on where we are basically to get back to zero, and taking into account that additional 96.4 ending balance, that's the difference between the 720 and the 623.
Right.
Okay. Disregarding any contingency or any ending balance for the current biennium, is it 623.7 or 720 that gets us back to zero?
623.7 gets you to zero.
Okay.
I have a question, Tom. If we, during our special session coming up, were to go in and to cut $720 million or $623 million from our budget, how would that affect our state's economy, and is that reflected anywhere in your projections?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shafori, our projections at the moment are what we consider is current law, although we do have, as Cora was mentioning, projections of what stimulus packages may turn out to be, and those try to be incorporated in there. So we do not specifically have in the forecast the cutting of expenditures of that amount and what impact that would have on the economy. And that is something that we will need to look at in our next forecast. But that is definite. Just as we've had all this talk that you increase federal expenditures, that's stimulative to the economy. Well, if you decrease government expenditures at the state level, that slows the process down.
And so some of that, the money that we had to cut from our budget, were to reflect in fewer federal tax dollars for matching funds coming our way, that would only further send us into a recession or further affect our ability to rebound from the recession?
Well, here, let's say that it on net is a slowing effect. Given, all the federal stimulus packages and so on, I think the recession is, the forecast would still stand as is, in that we're bottoming out in the second quarter of 2002 and we have a recovery. To the extent that is softened, will be related to the cuts of expenditures that you may end up doing.
And I suppose the net effect of that will depend on where the cuts are made. I mean, it's a change, I suppose, depending on where any budget cuts occur.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
Yes. Just so I make sure I'm clear on this, earlier we were told that the hole that we have to fill is the 720, and then just now we heard that 623 gets us to zero. So could you kind of clarify what you mean by each one of those statements?
Sure. Senator Castillo, the legislatively adopted budget that you approved included an ending balance of $96.4 million. So that's why your hole truly is the entire 720 to get you to LAB, because that was part of what you approved. But to get just to zero, meaning you're starting the next biennium with absolutely nothing for a beginning balance, that's just the 623.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Is that clear? That was a little bit confusing when we first saw that, and I wanted to make sure we understood. No, that's okay.
That's
good thing we didn't project a higher ending balance.
Solve our problem right now.
That was a joke. Any other questions or comments from the committee on the forecast? If not, we've reached the point of agenda for a break. Cora, I want to thank you especially for the time you've been coming to us. It's been a pleasure to have you. I'm sorry your last visit couldn't have brought happier news, but we don't hold you personally accountable for that. And good luck to you. Tom, thank you again. We will be in recess for 15 minutes.
Because I know we have that in the